Hello, everyone, and welcome back to MF Uncensored. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you can find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like the Multiverse Fancast and Cinematic Adventures. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me via the Zoom studio is a guy who I think is going to bring a ton of value, a ton of information, and highlight how bad I am with sports. That is Mr. Daniel Hickman. Daniel, how are you today?
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Paul.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I'm really excited to chat with you because even though I'm going to joke about my severe lack of knowledge of sports to the point where I don't even know what I'm doing for the Super Bowl, I'm super psyched to talk to you about all sorts of things because, man, you are a man of many talents, and I was very impressed.
No, thank you very much. And going back to the Super Bowl thing, I'm not a fan. I love to be my biggest fan. And I think that should be for all of us. Instead of following people and their dreams and their successes, we should be dialing and spotlighting what we need to do to be better than yesterday.
Man, that's like you're already jumping in with like some solid. I love it, man.
You set me up. You teed me up.
I teach you too well. Unintentionally, too. And if I always say that unintentional teeing is the cornerstone of a good conversation where you watch so many interviews and like you watch so many videos where it's very like, here's the question that you're going to get and here's the answer, like very scripted. And one of the best things about my show, about our show, what we do is nothing scripted. And I love it.
Absolutely. I love it.
So for our listeners and our viewers, why don't you tell them just right off the bat a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a dad of three girls and grew up in Connecticut. As soon as freshman year happened, I moved to New Hampshire, set up a life there after playing four years of minor league professional ice hockey and settled down my wife there. And as soon as my child was born, we decided to move to Florida on a whim. That's where I played minor league hockey in Jacksonville. So we were like, hey, you know, our kids are going to, you're a full ride soccer player. I'm a minor league professional hockey player. Our kids are going to be running out of you. So let's get them out of the sweatpants weather and the hoodies that we hide our bodies where we go to the beach only 1 month a year. Like, let's go do something different. And we were the house full of parties and the hosting and so many people, so social, and had a six-figure job, didn't have to leave. I was third in the company. But like, we moved to Florida to start over and start a new life. And that's kind of where we went. But I also have run up Dad Athlete podcast to help dads take their health back, but also help them elevate themselves to be better than yesterday, like we talked about. I run a physician recruiting company from absolutely anywhere, as long as I have internet and silence. I can do that from absolutely anywhere. And that's really, there's a bunch of different things, but yeah, that's about it for now.
So I love, there's a lot of things to unpack here. I'm super excited to go through it with you. Obviously, first and foremost, you said podcast. I have to address a podcast because we're a podcast. Now for you, it's about dads taking their physical fitness back. For you, like, how did that start specifically?
Super deep. I was a guy, I was in shape my entire life. I ended up having my wife get pregnant and I got settled. I got domesticated, drank more beers than normal. Still played hockey, like cardiovascular there. I was there. But when it came down to my aesthetics, so I was losing it like every single day. I didn't even know. I was just hiding it, as we talked about, with sweatpants and everything. And then I just focused on building my business from scratch. And that's where I really went downhill because I was eating my emotions and a lot of stress, tons of coffee, late nights, early mornings, working a full-time job while I was starting a company. It just tore me apart inside and out, full of anxiety, cortisol. And then I gained about over 40 pounds. And I was a hockey player with like really big thighs. So the muscle of the thighs ended up turning into like fat thighs and a big waist. I think it was like a 38 waist on a belt or 40. And I was afraid to tuck in my shirt when I was at work because I was embarrassed in what my torso and everything looked like. So that, you know, I just basically lost myself and I was lost as a man, no longer proud of who I was. I lost my image. I lost my competitive edge. And I want guys to know that they're not alone. And we all go through it. We all fall forward. As long as we fall forward, we're okay with making mistakes. And we're interviewing dads to share tips and hacks and what they're doing. and see how we can help, you know, dads out there that are in the trenches.
See, I love it because as somebody that's struggled with his own health and weight, and I've talked about it ad nauseum, nobody wants to hear me talk my story anymore at this point. But I had a similar issue where I was never an athletic kid. That's the joke, right? I discovered martial arts though at the age of 10, which, despite anybody's discussions, it is a sport, it is athletic. It's just not competitive in the way that I was doing it. But it helped me find my health, it helped me find my fitness, it helped me find passion. I started running Tough Mudders and Spartans. Like, I love getting in the mud, I love getting dirty. I actually proposed to my wife at the finish line of her first Tough Mudder. So,
That is so cool.
oh man, well, it's a little selfish, and I always say it because I knew there was going to be professional photographers at the finish line.
That's
But
solid.
saved a few dollars. But so for me, health and fitness was always a really important thing. And then I was faced at a crossroads in my life where it was either do job A or job B. Job A was the passion job. It was follow this, like, this is the thing that you love to do. And then job B was the huge job security, the pension, the health benefits, the whole nine. And I was like, how can I balance that? The passion job was martial arts. It was being a martial arts instructor, owning a school and teaching and being active. The other job, less so. But I ended up balancing it to some regards. I took the more secure job because I was just shy of 30 at the time. And I was like, I have $12 in my savings account right now. Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, passion's great. So take that job. I still do teach though. I do private lessons for kids with special needs. It's one of my favorite things in the world. But take this job, and suddenly I'm working, and same thing. I'm sitting a lot more. I'm leading this lifestyle where I don't have time to eat, so I got to go. What's available? And it's never something healthy. And same thing, man. Like, I went from lean and very like in shape to suddenly I was like, I don't like tucking in my shirt still, even though I've switched back. So I love the idea of, recognizing it as an adult male, especially because nobody talks about our bodies like that. Growing up, nobody looking big guy, like, that was like the biggest compliment. But I like the
Depends on
idea.
how they put
Exactly.
it.
All about
There's
the
so many
empathy.
different ways you could take that
Oh
comment.
God, it's wild. Like, male body types are some of the things that just nobody knows how to talk about. And I think it's great, especially for new dads. Like, that's a huge lifestyle change.
Yeah. And in the fact also too is like a lot of us men like, hey, I'm about to get in shape. Like, I'm gonna take this seriously. And then what do? They go straight to like GNC and buy like 200 like dollars of like disgusting protein powder full of toxins and all these other things. I do not take any supplements. There is nothing. It's all straight up natural. My wife has an amazing diet for me, and that's it. It's hard work. You don't have to have, like, I think I was at a hockey practice, and a parent comes over because I coach hockey, girls hockey, and the parent comes over while I'm trying my skate. She's like, "Yeah, I saw your success, your before and after. Like, good job, like, congrats." And I was like, thank you. And then a regular human behavior comment came out of her mouth of, well, you probably have to have like a lot of protein and stuff, right? And I'm like, no, like I ate food. Like, you know, so it's this whole myth that you think you have to have all this stuff, but you just got to just have a good mindset, stay consistent, and do hard stuff.
See, as somebody who fell into that trap in the worst possible way, like, it's exactly 1,000% right. What happens when guys want to lose weight is two things. They're going to sign up for a gym and they're never going to go. Like, that's always the big thing. Or they're going to go on some sort of extreme diet. And all guys say the same thing. We're going to go to GNC. I hate GNC. GNC
I
is
used
one
to
of my,
work
did
there.
you really? Oh no.
Yeah, I literally, the more you studied every single, sorry to cut you off,
No,
the
no,
more
no.
you study every single product, you know how much you get paid on specific products. So you push those, and it's like this deceiving, like, oh, it just kills your morals. And then eventually I was like, all right, I can't do this anymore. And I'd see these guys come in for more creatine and stuff. And I mean, like, I think like a little bit of creatine for some people is good, but I just haven't gone that route because I'm not looking to get that way. So it's like when you're doing fitness racing, it's not for the looks. Like, it that happens, it's a byproduct. It's like you're trying to get your body well oiled for a race, and that happens automatically. But for a lot of dads, there's like they just do their biceps and they buy a t-shirt that hides their belly, and they're good to go.
Easy, like, it's hiding that the downside of what you're doing, right? Like I fell into a lot of traps when I first started trying to get fit, and the biggest one was diet, and that has followed me for years. It's something that I actively work on still, and I found myself in a much better place. I do supplement a little bit, but more just for I do a little like I do one protein shake just to curb the hunger during the day because I have a long day. My day starts, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm at work by 7 because I'm a morning workout guy. I love my morning workout. Yes, just
That's way more than a regular person is doing already. I mean, you're already winning the morning, so you're starting your day by no one bossing you around, and you're doing it your way in your style that you're able to fill other people's cup like you were doing for me and your people that are listening. There's no way you could be present in this conversation if you didn't wake up this early into today to take care of yourself.
And that's the way that I like every day, you know, what not during the weekends or time off. I'll still wake up early. I set my day up for success. Like I'm already here. Like I could, it's my choice where the day goes from there. And I like my early morning workouts, but I do find myself getting very hungry during the day, like especially mid-morning. So I have a protein shake, but otherwise I used to, dude, when I tell you I used to be bad, like I was doing, I think at one point, four shakes a day. And I replaced my meals with them. And in my mind, I was like, how could this be unhealthy? It's protein. It's Beachbody supplements, who I still do very much enjoy, as much as I like to bash that time in my life. I've met a lot of great people and a lot of great supports during it. But now, same thing, like most of my diet, and I hate the word diet because people think it's like your keto diet. No, it's just what I eat during the day, man. Like just
Yeah, it's
my
just
diet.
the proper way of eating. It's just staying away from toxins, reading the ingredients, and eating food that's made from the earth and staying away from food that's made by a human in a hazmat suit with gloves. So if you can stay away from food like that, you're good.
Now, for you though, like you started this podcast. What, why a podcast in this regards?
Honestly, I hit a moment in my life where I won age group world championship for DECA fitness racing, and it's basically like 10 zones as fast as you can against 11 other dudes in Atlantic City, and I got second place, so you're technically like a champion, but you're not first place. But I missed it by like 30 seconds or so. Mike Staley's a beast. I got re respect for that guy, but after I won that, I kind of hit a level of emptiness. Where like you really want something, but then you're like, okay, well, what's next? Like, and it kind of hit me mentally, almost like a little depressing. Like I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, what do I do now? I just did the pinnacle of that sport. Like, what do I do now? And it was a weird moment. I just kind of was lost. I didn't really do anything but run for a month, and then somebody said like, hey, you should start a podcast. I'm like, oh, no, and then out of nowhere, I just sometimes when I wake up, my feet hit the floor, and I was like, I think I want to do this. I want to interview other men to help people that were in a similar situation when I was lost. Because it was almost like I reconnected with that old me mentally, I think, that feeling of being lost again. And I was like, this podcast has been making me a better man. So all the gems that they're dropping, every episode, I'm becoming a better man from what they're giving me. And I'm listening to my own podcast interviews, and then sharing some gems for myself and then doing some solos. And I mean, from this month compared to last February, I'm just like a whole different man. And it's just great to know if there's so many people out there that are getting a lot out of the podcast. But I'm basically doing it to realize that racing is not my legacy. Racing is a tool and a stepping stone to my legacy, which is the podcast and leading to being a speaker and then leading into who knows. But I want to be able to help as many men as possible. Just not just be competitive, but have a winner mindset in everything they do. Not racing, but as a dad in your business, being a present for your wife, holding the door for her, anything, just being a winner in everything we do every day.
Like that a lot, man. Like you sound like the kind of guy that's always working towards something. Like you get a little restless is I think the best way. So
Yeah.
I can relate, because there are times where I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm down here in our studio just doing work, and I'm just at total peace with whatever's going on. I'm like, same thing. This is what I'm leaving behind at some point. And I love talking to people. I love doing interviews. This show actually wasn't even an interview show when it first started. It was purely a topical show with myself and the other co-host where we would just shoot the shit. And it just kind of morphed and turned. And suddenly I was like, let's get people on. Let's talk to people. And it exploded out of nowhere. But like it was a wild beginning, and it took off running really fast. Now, for you though, when you first started the show, what were some of the challenges that you jumped into?
Technology, imposter syndrome, fear of taking a risk and putting myself out there and vulnerability out there. I knew the idea was great. I threw it by a bunch of people and they were like, yeah, man, that's like no one else is doing this. I love it. And it has like an emotional side to it that you don't really see when you interview athletes. So like, well, how do you train? And how do you eat? And how do you race? And how do you run? It's like, dude, how do you juggle this, and be a parent? And then they're just dropping gems. But once I got over that, I listened to a podcast that had step by step, and it was like episode 8. They were like, I want you to go to a recording mechanism and just record. And I was like, all right, well, if you know me, I'm like pretty prepared. Like I'll have like bullets out. Okay, these are ideas, this and that. I was like, oh, let's see what happens. I recorded it and I kept it. And that was my first episode. And then my first interview was my buddy Chris Healy. I thought he wanted to interview me a second time. And you're on the Zoom like this. And he's like, all right, man, I'm ready for you. I'm like, but I'm come from sales and recruiting and relationship building. And I literally pulled that out of my butt, like out of nowhere. And it was a good call. And he forced me to get outside my comfort zone because I didn't have to fully like grip the bat too tight. I just got it done. But yeah, those are the toughest parts in the beginning. But now, like you said, it's transitioning where I'm noticing that some of my solo podcasts are getting more listens than the interviews. And I'm like, all right, this is what the people want to hear. So now I'm doing a little bit more. So.
Yeah, it's funny because for our YouTube channel, we were posting very consistently, but first it was just the audio would automatically get put onto YouTube by our server, which was Podbean, right? So I'd put the episode on Podbean, I'd do all this work on descriptions and this and that, and it would automatically get posted to Podbean, and it would just be a stationary like graphic, and I would get two listeners, three listeners, and then suddenly I sat down and I was like, well, I'm doing all this work. How can I optimize it the best? So we ended up putting it about 2 months of work straight into YouTube, and it exploded. But you know what really was the craziest thing? YouTube Shorts out of nowhere. So like our videos will still get maybe like 50 to 100 listens on average on a good one. And then I uploaded a short, went out to dinner with my wife, checked my phone halfway through. It was like 6,000 views. I was like, what the hell happened?
That's the same thing with my stuff. Like a whole hour and 10 minutes interview with the Monster Jam, great clips, guy, and it's like three views. But then I post like 15 seconds of me going to a start line of a race. There's like 3,000 views out of nowhere on a short. So it's like, I get it, man.
I love it though. Like
I
it's,
won't understand it, but I'll figure it out one day.
and I, you are the kind of guy that I can tell if you don't understand something or if something's a challenge to you, it makes you attack it even more.
Absolutely. I'm also kind of like one step at a time. So it's like if I can master getting like thousands of listens for my podcast, then I think I'll pay more attention to YouTube. But right now it's just literally just dumping it on YouTube and, whatever. I don't even edit it. It's just that's the whole interview. I'm like, whatever. I literally put on unedited just so there's real stuff in there, Like I have guys like, hold on, let me talk to my wife for a second. So whatever.
I think actually for our show, especially going into it unedited makes it just, we don't do a script. We played around with scripts and I always do notes. I like to have notes just as a more as a reminder of, hey, got to bring this up, or hey, this was a really good question that I wanted to ask. But when like people are like, you got a script, especially solo stuff, I was like, it's not for me. And I'm super robotic. I was in sales too at one point and I
You
flow.
can't read a script in sales.
Oh,
You have to make it your own. You have to sound like it's genuine. And
that's why, like, I like movies like The Wolf of Wall Street's the best example, where they actually show the script that they have to read. And I remember getting into a fight with a guy from Verizon over the phone. And I know, like, it got, I'm a very nice person, but I got to a point where I wasn't a nice person. And I hope if he's out there listening somewhere, he accepts my apology one day. But at one point I said, please stop reading from your script. I know that you're reading this because I'm saying this. Please just give me a supervisor. And he was dumbfounded. He was like, oh, I was like, I did sales. Please, please get off.
I didn't handle that in my role play.
Yeah. It's just, you hear the pages just whipping by.
Yeah, this is not my study guide.
Hold on one second, but I love
That's
it, man.
funny.
And I love that, like, you're facing podcast challenges and you're really attacking them. And I think that's great. Now, what do you think, though, for you get somebody on the show or you get somebody, what is the most common challenge that dads have besides time management?
When you first said that, I initially thought of something separate of what you just talked about.
Okay.
I think one of the biggest challenges of is learning about human behavior, and where you're a podcaster and you want to spotlight their life, but they don't respect your time and scheduling or locking down a time, or it's like it, that's when you hit the moment. I was like, oh, okay, this is just like physician recruiting when I was new in 2010. If they're going to be a pain in the butt now, they're going to be a pain in the butt later, and they're just not a good fit. And we have to be okay with saying, no, we don't want that person on our show, regardless of how awesome they are, what they're doing. So I have two people like that so far, and I'm like, you know what? It is what it is. Like, you missed your shot.
So it's funny because when you and I were scheduling, you were very open, like, hey man, like I got this time. Can we do this? I'll always accommodate someone. Like, even like if somebody's I my rule of podcasting is if they're 5 minutes late, I just send a message like, hey, I hope everything's good. If they're 10 minutes late, I'm just gonna be like, hey, we were supposed to. And then if they're 15 minutes late, I'm pretty done. Obviously things happen, but same thing. I had one interview very recently that they very specific, like they were like, this time I was like, cool, yeah, I got you. Did my notes, got everything. I'm sitting there, 10, 15 minutes to go by. And I message him and he's like, I'm so sorry, my daughter got sick. I was like, bro, I get that. Totally understand. When, like, you tell me when you want to reschedule. We end up rescheduling for, I want to say, the following week. I even messaged him halfway through, like, hey man, how's your daughter doing? Like, all that stuff. He's like, he's so much better. Thank you so much. And was a no show on that Friday. And I was like, I'm not messaging you again. Like, you had your chance. I don't want to say that my time is so valuable, but at the same time, like, I could be doing other things. So
Oh, it's tough for me because I gotta either have the kids leave the house, or like today, I have to say, hey, my wife's downstairs putting a movie in. Everybody be quiet. Please close the blinds, close the curtains because the dog will bark. So let's like all stay quiet for me for 60 minutes, please. But like to get all that ready. To have someone no show is tough. If they're gonna do it once, they're gonna do it twice. So we're just better off moving away. But to answer your question, the biggest situations or hardship that dads go through, I think it's transitioning their competitive edge into non-physical things, like competing who has the best yard cut or the nicest cars in the driveway, beer pong. Bocce, fantasy football. These are all tools in this whole world that was put together for us to be obese. Like it makes everything easy for us. And I think that's the biggest thing when you become a father. You think you can do it all and you have to let go of things. So that kills your image as well, where you're transitioning to be a dad, especially when your wife is pregnant because you're scared to be a dad. You don't really know what to expect. You just see a belly and a kicking stomach. But then, like, when the baby comes, then you're like, wow, like, this is absolutely magical. This child's going to get everything they want from me. And then you're just like, you forget about everything about you. Like, you don't even know you have a home gym or you forgot about your gym membership. And it's just, I think that's the biggest issue is image, but also transitioning their competitive edge into non-physical things.
so it's funny because we always joke in our household that the things that we never thought would excite us now excite us. Like the weirdest things, like, hey, you want to go grocery shopping? Hell yeah, I want to go grocery shopping on a Friday night. Let's do that. Like, if you
Absolutely.
told me at 22, like, hey, that's going to be your highlight, you're going to go grocery shopping, Like, I would have been like, get out of here. You're crazy. But even just my wife and I don't have kids at the time of the recording. Hopefully someday soon, we're really excited for that one day. But like, we're not at that point, but as soon as we got married, things started to slowly transition. And you know, I'm very blessed that my wife is exceptionally understanding both of my podcasting time and also my gym time, to the point where, bless her soul, I went to the gym during our honeymoon and she did not give me any grief about it, and she's like the best. So do you think that there's also an issue of support for a lot of these dads?
I agree, and that's what I was going to say is the reason why you're able to do all that stuff is because you established your connection with your wife on why you want to do these things. And why would your wife want to take away something that fuels you to be who you are today authentically and happy? Like, why take that away from someone? You explained that reason why, that waking up early, sweetheart, it helps me start my day right. And I can't wait to help out and do everything around the house because of that. Or, you know, I know I'm on vacation, but like that gym looks sweet and I really want to get over there just for like 20 minutes. Is that cool? Like maybe I know you want to go tanning, right? And you don't want me to get in the way. Like I can set you up and then I can go to the gym real quick. What do you think? Like it's just, it's compromise relationship. You know, it's a negotiation, but a lot of men, they're like, I have a cousin up north. It's just like, and he can't do anything without getting the permission from his wife and scared to get that permission. Like you can't be in that situation ever. Like we are human beings. Like your wife has to stand up for herself. You need to stand up for yourself and what you love and come to a common ground because you both want to be healthy. You want your kids to see you healthy. So you're emulating you. And it's just a trickle effect from there. You know, my wife loves doing dance classes. Why would I take that away from her? That's my time that I get with the girls. And, you know, it's just, and going back to what you said, like on a weekend, like I love to just hang out with my wife and watch a show. Maybe we barely watch, sit down and watch TV. Like maybe like once every week. Like tonight we have a plan. Like it's to the point we're so busy, we have to plan the movie night and we're gonna do movie night. But then like the next morning, I'm gonna be grinding a 12-mile run tomorrow on the bridges and like with my buddy. Like that to me is a perfect weekend. And then I go to basketball game, my daughter and support her. And like to me, that's a perfect weekend. But before the nomad lifestyle we're gonna get into and started my own business. Like a lot of us feel like when we work Monday through Friday, 40 to 45 or 55 hours a week, we have to force fun. Like it's like we have to get it in on the weekend. But on top of it, we have to do the lawn. We have to take the kids to a million little birthday parties. The more you live in a planned community, the more birthdays you're gonna have that you gotta go to some random John's house. You don't want them there in the first place. Or there's gonna be someone's late night barbecue drinking night with down the street and at Tim's house. But like we don't need that. We don't need to feel like you have to shove in something or you deserve to have a six pack of beers. Like you don't deserve to hurt your body with toxic fluids. Like drink some electrolytes and hang out on the couch and be present for your wife instead of going out to the bar risking getting in trouble. Like what's the difference, you know?
Yes. So for me, like I had a lot of challenges with reward systems, right? And we all do is like, especially that is something that is ingrained to a lot of kids. Like, hey, you did A, B, and C, you're getting ice cream tonight. Oh shit, I'm getting ice cream because I did the things that I'm supposed to be doing. And I think that as adults, especially, like for me, I know that like I got to a point where I had to reevaluate how much I was drinking during the week. Now, don't get me wrong, I will never be the person that like my dad and my stepmom. Totally, they don't drink at all. They used to drink heavily and they just cold turkeyed one day and like they are so much happier with it or without it. Even like we went to Italy 2 years ago for my dad's retirement and he didn't touch a single drop. I was like, there's so much limoncello. This is your retirement. We're in Italy. He's like, I'm good. And it's just not even on his radar. And to the point where my wife and I, we during the weekends, we'll try and enjoy ourselves a little bit in that regards, but it's all about that balancing act. And you know, I always say your body's like a car. If you put the wrong fuel into your body, your car's not going down the hill, much less driving 100 miles. So I love the idea of not forcing like that idea of fun. Like I did this, and this, so I deserve this. I like that you're kind of attacking that a little bit.
Yeah, like you deserve to be hungover tomorrow morning when your kid needs to go to T-ball and you have to go mow your lawn and your mother-in-law's. Like, good luck. You're going to have a great day. Good luck going into Monday as well on time
so
to work.
Part of my job is I work, I'm involved with a high school, and you will see parents at some of these games with their coffee cups and they're drinking. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, get
Living
it.
life, living life.
Like, if you're having that much trouble just coping, like I feel bad. Like, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I love sometimes just sitting in silence with my wife while we're each doing our own thing, whether she likes to read, so she's reading, or I'll be like gaming. Sometimes we'll do both together. It's the happiest moments of my life. And it's like, just because we're together and we're not forcing anything.
Yeah. I mean, I used to drink like a fish, especially as a minor league hockey player. We have so much downtime. But for me and my wife, I think we went like a year, year and a half of committing to each other, like, hey, we're not going to have more than two glasses of wine. We're going to get rid of the liquor because that is makes you lose your memory and it's extremely toxic. And then we're going to get rid of the beer because I have a wheat allergy that when I drink it, I would feel like bloated and gassy every single time, but I still did it because that's what you got to do, man, with the boys. You got to have beers. And I would sacrifice my digestive system just to fit in. That's what we do, right? But then one of our friends was pregnant and she was like, hey, I challenge you guys to not drink for 9 months with me. I was like, sure. 9 months turned into a year, 2 months. I mean, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I haven't had a drop. And it's just totally, everything has up leveled for me. I just like, I don't need it, you know, different strokes for different folks, but if you're going to have a couple drinks with your wife, great. You can't get in trouble. You're with her.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, if you're going on a golfing trip with the boys or a bachelor party, like you're better off just not drinking at all.
Oh yeah.
Nothing will good come out of that.
Oh, I'm with you. There have been many days where I was like, what did I do? Like, I had so much fun last night, but today I'm paying for it. And I don't ever like, the only time I like to do something intense and pay for it the next day is when I'm sore after a good workout. Then I'm like, that's the kind of trade-off that I like in my life personally.
Yeah. I mean, whatever works, it's whatever it is, it's working, right?
Yeah, so, man. So one of the things that you mentioned, though, just recently is having a nomad lifestyle. So I'm sure there's at least one listener or one watcher going, what is he talking about? So why don't you explain the nomad lifestyle?
So it's there's different levels. So for us, like we're kind of on the lower end of nomad life right now. We're a little more centered. But there was a time we were triggered by trauma and grief. We lost my mother-in-law and we already had a cruise booked shortly after that. And we decided to still go and travel. It's like travel kind of helps us to clearly think and really, really figure out what we want in life. Even before that, we went on like a Miami trip to see a speaker at a retreat there for 2 days. And even that drive home was just memorable. Like just having that moment, just me and her, no kids at my parents' house and stuff. But then after that, we decided just to sell our house, and sell her house as well. And then we moved to the beach in a unit house where there's like two units. We went from a 5-bedroom house in a cookie cutter neighborhood to like a small little old apartment, but it was overlooking the ocean. So it's like, we got the ocean, basically we were living with the ocean, which was cool. And then, we ended up moving more south to a different place along the beach. And then after that, we moved closer to where we used to live to see if we missed that plant community area. And we stayed there literally, it lasted like 6 months and we were out. We sold everything. We put a bunch of stuff in storage. We moved into a 40-foot RV and we decided to say, you know what? We don't live anywhere. We are traveling the country. And we threw everything into the RV and didn't know how to drive it. And we just drove it all the way to Texas, through the panhandle from Florida, up through New Mexico, to Sedona, Arizona, and we stayed there for 3 months in one spot. And then when we were done, we kind of had a voyage back to Texas to visit my father-in-law there and then back to Florida because at the time my mom wasn't doing too good healthy wise. So my mom's, I learned all the sales and influencing from my mom. So she convinced us to come back. So then we rented another home in a different place and then another home after that. And then we went back to the RV, but this time we didn't want to stay at a different place every 2 weeks. because we had a deal, like if you go to different places every 2 weeks, you had like a deal. And that's a lot of moving, especially as a person working on the road, a lot of coffee shops.
Oh, I can imagine.
And I can't work in front of the kids in that small space, so it's tough. So, but we made it work. There were some rough times, but we made it work. And then after that, we moved on to a horse ranch last year, and we parked the RV. We didn't want to move it anywhere. We just kept it there for about 3 months, and now we are here in this house rental. So, we get to live. It's a really hard thing when you know you can live anywhere, but you also don't want to be too far from family. But you also don't want to imagine like you're still going to visit them, regardless of where we are. But yeah, so that's life that's going on. Kids are homeschooled, all that stuff.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Like just hearing it, I'm like sitting here going, I'm really kind of jealous. Like the idea, I love to travel. And that was like one of the biggest things during COVID, like just the limitation on just leaving your house.
It was during COVID too.
Oh, dude.
And
That's wild. But like for me and my wife, we like I mentioned, we went to Italy with my family 2 years ago now. Hawaii's our next big trip this year. We're
oh,
super
it's so
excited.
cool. We want to go.
Oh, we're so excited. We love to travel. We have been in like some of the shittiest hotels you can imagine, and we've stayed in some of the nicest places you can imagine. And even though like staying in a really nice hotel is always a good experience, we have so much fun just getting out and walking around. We walked, I don't even know how many steps we did when we went to Italy just the first day in Rome. We went everywhere. And I'm a restless spirit. Like as much as I do love sitting at home with my wife, I love adventure. Like I love if I'm going on vacation, I want to do stuff while I'm there.
We only have one life, so live it up best way we
So
can.
for you though, like you're into business, you're into sports. Like what are you doing right now?
My physician recruiting company that I started, I'm hitting a point this year. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's like the 40-year-old blues, but like I'm hitting a moment like where I s like it was 10 o'clock. About 2 weeks ago, my wife asked me to go to my daughter's ballet. It was our third week. She was like, yeah, she's doing really good. It was a weird moment when I was there. I was just watching her dance and loving it. And I was like, holy crap. Like when we had no money in 2017 and 2018, when we started this company and I looked so unhealthy from top to bottom, and we took a chance. We weren't making any money, and I quit my sales job, medical sales job, to do it full time. And to know that we created this life together is like, it's really groundbreaking. And it hit me like emotionally a little bit too. And it was just a great moment, just a proud dad, proud entrepreneur, proud husband moment where if I didn't take that plunge and I continued allowing these companies to control my life, I don't know where I'd be. I don't know if I'd still be drinking. I don't know if I'd still be living in the past. Like it's just the risk for me is like risk versus regret. And I don't want to leave this earth with regret.
Love that, man. Like people tend to focus on the things that they could have done. Like it's always, I could have done this, or the world's out against me. Like it's not my fault. It's bad luck. It's excuses, excuses, excuses. My biggest goal in my life is to be on my deathbed, look over at my wife, hopefully, and just be like, hey, we kicked ass. Like we did it. Like the stories, the life, that's the legacy too. Like, what did you do on this planet? Were you a potato who stayed at home all weekend, just rotting away? Or were you like even just making one person's day in some capacity? Like you don't know the person that you say hello to on the street is having the worst day in their lives, and that one hello just changed everything about them. And that's what's really cool about what we do.
I agree, and that's what I'm really finding in the podcast. That's why I'm finding in I want to become a really good speaker. Like I'm finding as a guy that's always chasing trophies and medals and all that stuff, but it's finally coming to fruition and coming together. What I'm really meant to do is just to help every single man I come across to just get that fire inside and not settle for average and just always wanting to be better. It's just always being just a little bit better than yesterday. You don't have to race races, but if you can just be a little bit, tiny bit better than yesterday, that's all that matters. But also willing to fall on your face and embarrass yourself. Who cares? Like, You know how many times I said in my solo podcast yesterday and I didn't edit it? I don't care. Like everything I said was genuine, and I'll take it. You know, it's I guess you have to just be okay with being okay with falling in your face, but it's a sick little cycle. Like it's a really good one. Like you take massive action and then you study yourself and you realize your weak, your SWOT analysis of what you got going on. Then you tweak some things and you do it again. And you're going to realize you're going to do better the next time.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Like, it's funny because when I moved into my current job, my current profession, my career, as I like to call it, I was already podcasting at the time. It was something that I was already doing. And I have a very, I don't want to say toxic masculinity type job, but a lot of alpha males.
Yeah.
And they found out that I had a podcast. So they, like one of the guys is like, "Hey, heard you got a podcast." I was like, "So immediately it was about I was about to get defensive, like stop, like leave me, like lay off or whatever." Instead I go, "Why did you listen to it? How is the audio quality? Because I've been tweaking." He's like, "Well, I haven't listened to it." I was like, "Then you're gonna give me grief about something that you haven't listened to that I love to do? Dude, you already
Yeah.
lost." And nobody's bothered me about it since. But you know, it wasn't vindictive at the time. It was more just like the male camaraderie type thing. But
Yeah.
I totally agree. You gotta be afraid. You gotta not be afraid to fall on your face, because at the end of the day, nobody cares. Like, you're out
Yeah.
doing your thing. And if anybody's that concerned about what thing I'm doing, I guess I have a big fan.
Yeah, and that's a thing that a lot of men will try to create and lay down speed bumps in front of you. As soon as they see some other man finding their direction, they're the first ones to attach a parachute to you or put some speed bumps down to slow you down because they don't believe they can do it.
Yeah.
So that the alpha male, like there was a way to find a way to put you back in your place and allow you to stay average and not be a winner. That's a difference. So
Totally agree.
that's good,
Now,
man.
for you though, speaking of being a winner, you have a recent accomplishment that just happened, and I wanted to let our audience hear about it from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I played 4 years minor league professional ice hockey. My entire life, I never played with another person of color, and I'm not huge on like the racial things out there in the world. I just worry about me. I have all different type of friends my entire life. I'm half black, half Puerto Rican, and I have white friends, Italian friends, Spanish friends, Portuguese friends, Indian friends, Bolivia. Like so many different friends. I don't care what they look like. If we have a connection, we're buddies. Like one of my best buds for fitness has a long red ponytail. Don't even, it's like a braided ponytail. Don't ask, but the guy does obstacle course racing and he's good at it. So regardless of what people look like, I don't care. I played minor league hockey and I ended up playing on a team with two other people of color. And all three of us started a game one day and we ended up being second, the second all black line in the history of professional ice hockey. And I just recently got interviewed by the news. That's going to come out on Monday and Wednesday. So I'm excited to just record my screen and get that out there. Because it's great. You know, the highest level I got to play was with John Quick, who's starting goalie for the LA Kings. So I was getting paid by LA Kings, but I was like the three tier below that. But I got as far as I could when a lot of other guys didn't even try. And that's, I think that's where it kind of started. I was in grad school. And I got invited. Actually, let's go back a step. I know we're not really talking about this, but this can really help elevate somebody. But I was in sports management in undergrad in New Hampshire, and I did everything under the sun. And every time I got an email, you want to volunteer at a football arena, football, I was like, yes, boom, volunteer. I would stop anything I do to volunteer, play on the tennis. I made the tennis team when I never even played on tennis before, but I always played with my dad. Just I'm really good at just adapting to things. And then the hockey team, I was there every 4 years, whatever, every year for 4 years. But I ended up getting selected out of like probably 100 people that graduated for sports management in New Hampshire and be on the sales team for the AHL hockey team selling tickets. And it was the job that everyone was drooling to get. And it was just me and three other guys. Like it was such an accomplishment. I get there, I'm doing the job, And I'm also being a mascot handler, marketing guy on the ice and stuff. And I got to be on the ice for the All-Star game because I'm a good skater. So I got to like go the flag, hold the flag out there and stuff like that. And I get there. It's just one of those moments. I'm doing the job and then I'm walking. And I was like, I'm staring at the players. And I'm feeling this side of me. I'm like, this competitive rage inside of me, like they're not too far off of what I'm doing, what I can do. Like, what is going on? Like, I could do that part. Oh, I could do that part better. Or a lot of those guys are good. Don't get me wrong. I didn't play at that level, but I played at the level just right below it. Mm-hmm. But it was that moment. I feel like I could do this. And I was like, nah, I can't. So then I'm in grad school, listen to my parents, like go to grad school, just play some men's league, stay in shape a little bit, you know, just still drinking, partying, hanging out with my wife, who was my girlfriend. So just living life, just doing what everyone told me to do, go to grad school and you'll have a great life. And I get something in the mail, join us for a professional rookie camp in Michigan. And I'm like, I'm going, let's do this. And my dad drove through the night, through New York, upstate New York, through Canada, down to Port Huron, right over the border and Michigan. And out of 2 days of tons of scars and blisters, not blisters, but like just, it was the first time I ever played hockey without a mask on.
Okay.
And I played extremely, extremely physical. And I had so many bumps and bruises, didn't lose any teeth. Luckily didn't get in a fight, but there was a lot of guys from Canada because I just knew how to fight, but I didn't know how to fight. Like, cause it was without a mask. I'm like, okay, so I'm going to get hurt. So So they chose only two players out of 64 players after 2 days. And I was one of them. Okay. So that was just one of those moments of the risk versus regret, right, where there's people that heard of me going to try out, but they didn't ever have the feeling inside of them to take that chance. So I dropped everything. I went in there and I quit my job and they were like, you sure you want to do this? I'm like, I had no idea what he meant by that. I found out like 5 years later, 4 years later. And I quit. And then I realized later when I was done playing my minor league hockey and I went back to try to get back in the sports, it's an unwritten rule that if you leave it, you're not coming back. Like, and if you do, good luck. Like, there might be something else, but you can never go back to that job. It's a system where you have to start as an intern and work your way up. And that's how you get through the ranks in sports management. So, just to motivate anybody, if you get that feeling that you feel like you can do something, go for it.
Yeah, man. Dude, I love it. And that's awesome. So that's actually, we're getting towards the end of our episode. Now, at the end of all of our episodes, we do like to play a little game, if you're interested, where we do a couple of rapid fire question and answers. I try and tailor them to whoever I'm speaking with. So,
sure, I like it.
I love it. All right. Let's see. Let me pull them up. What is a book or resource that influenced your motivational speaking journey?
I would say Eddie Pinheiro, his motivational videos on YouTube. But most recently, I'm really into Tim Grover.
Awesome. Let's see. What is one piece of advice for aspiring entrepreneurs and speakers?
Just go for it and just trust that you have the ability to do what it takes to get there and it'll happen.
Dude, that gave me chills, man. What I love it. What is one daily habit that you swear by?
Picking up my kids when they wake up.
Oh, I like that. Immediately in my mind, I thought like health, fitness, like this or that, but like that's actually
you gotta feel the fire, because when it hurts, they're the first ones in my mind to, I envision them being in a corner and looking at me somewhere.
Oh, dude, that's great. And then last one, what is a goal or vision that you have for not only your business, but also for your podcast?
For the world to know Daniel Jason Hickman, but for me to help so many men, I can't even keep count.
Dude, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And if any of our listeners want to learn more about you or get involved with you or in any capacity, listen to your show, what are some of the best ways that they can find you?
On IG, Daniel Jason Hickman. And honestly, I'm not a fitness coach. You have any questions whatsoever, I will help you for free. Just let me know how I can, you know, serve you guys.
That's awesome, man. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for jumping on. This was a great episode. I had a blast talking to you.
Awesome, man. And one last thing, Competitive Edge podcast. You have to add in the word fatherhood, and that'll come up. There's too many out there.
I can only imagine. So make sure we'll try and get you guys there with some links in description. So make sure you guys check that out.
Awesome.
Daniel, thank you so much for jumping in today.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Great podcast, too. Good job, man. Thank
Thanks,
you.
man. You take care.
See ya.